is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
You accept it or you correct it. Those are the only two options. If the players are doing something that is taking your program closer to the vision you have, then you praise them because that which gets praised gets repeated. If they're having behavior that's going in the opposite direction, then you need to correct that.
My friend Alan Stein Jr. was the very first guest on the Hoopheads podcast back in 2018, and today he joins us for episode number 250. Alan spent 15 years working with the highest performing basketball players in the world, including some of the best ever in the NBA. He shifted focus about 3 years ago to enter the world of corporate speaking when he realized that the leadership, culture, and teamwork he was teaching through basketball could be applied in the business world as well. Alan delivers high-energy keynotes and interactive workshops to improve performance, cohesion, and accountability. He inspires and empowers everyone he works with to take immediate action and improve mindset, habits, and productivity. In this 250th episode of the Hoopheads podcast, Alan and I talk about the five characteristics of great coaching from his book, Raise Your Game. Check the show notes to order your copy today. After you finish listening to this episode, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on your favorite podcast app. Those ratings help others in the basketball community to find our show. Make sure you subscribe to the Hoopheads podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, or YouTube so you never miss an episode. We plan to be around for a long time giving you access to some of the best minds in the game, from the grassroots to the NBA. Thanks for listening, and we hope you continue to join us for the next 250 episodes. Go grab your notebook right now so you can write down all your favorite quotes as you listen to this episode of the Hoopheads podcast with Alan Stein Jr. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinsing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel this morning, but I am pleased to welcome back to the podcast our very first guest on the Hoopheads podcast for episode number 250. Alan, can you believe 250 episodes since we had you on that first time? Alan Stein, welcome back to the podcast.
Man, I can't believe it. You, major hats off to you, my friend. 250 is an incredible landmark, and your show was phenomenal from the get-go and continues to get even better because of how much work and preparation you put into it. So please take a bow, Mr. Mike, because you should be very proud. 250 is really awesome.
Well, I pass out all the kudos to our guests, and it all started with you, and the help that you've given to us has been invaluable in the growth of the podcast. So as I will say probably multiple times here today, thank you very much for all the help that you've given us. And it got us off to a great start, and it's just continuing on today. And we're honored to have you back on for number 250. Hard to believe that we've gotten all the way up to that number, and we're going to keep on chugging along here. So
yeah, well, you go ahead and sign me up for number 500 and 1,000.
All right,
1,000. And do those too.
We're marking them down. We'll mark you down for those. So what we thought we would do today, Alan, is kind of go back and talk a little bit about your book, Raise Your Game, and focus in on the coaching section that you wrote and just kind of go through the five pillars of coaching that you talked about in the book. And that'll give us a chance to dive into those a little bit deeper and maybe take some tangents along the way and hear some stories. So let's start out with what it takes to be a good coach. And the first thing we want to talk about is vision. So give us an idea of why a coach needs vision and what vision for a coach looks like.
Vision is vital because it's the foundation to which the rest of the house is built. When it comes to putting an organization together, you have to have a clear, crisp vision of where you want to go, of what you want this team to be, how you're going to measure whether or not you're being successful. And, you know, vision is much more than just saying, you know, well, we want to win a championship. That's a rather shallow vision. You want to get great clarity on everything that you want this program or this team to be. So that's including things like, you know, your standards of excellence and the culture that you're hoping that you're going to be able to create. And really a leader's job is to have a positive influence over everyone and to help everyone become the best version of themselves. But it's also to get everyone aligned with that vision and buying in and believing into that vision so that people are willing to make personal sacrifices to get closer to that vision. And, you know, I mean, we can even take outside of just the game of basketball. When you look at some of the most visionary people in existence, you know, I mean, even somebody like a Steve Jobs comes to mind and his vision of what Apple was going to become and the types of products that they were going to develop and the way at which they were going to develop them. I mean, he had a vision that at the time people thought he was insane, but he had such clarity on that and got enough good people around him to believe in that vision that, you know, they were able to change history and create some pretty remarkable stuff. So vision and knowing where you want to go and who you want to be is vital.
So let's think about that from, let's say, a high school coach's perspective. When they start thinking about what's the vision for where I want my program to be, how much time do you think, or when is the proper time to start thinking about that vision? Because when I look at that, I say, boy, and we've talked to a bunch of coaches here on the podcast who have said, I started out as a seventh grade coach, or I started out as an assistant JV coach. And even at that moment, I was already formulating my vision. I was taking notes. I was creating a notebook with things that I liked about what my current program was doing, things I didn't like, or things that I'm definitely going to do, things that I'm not going to do. And I think that's something that is very, very important for coaches out there to understand, is that the vision can't happen like, oh, here I am in the job, and now suddenly I'm trying to create this vision on the fly. I think it's something that the good coaches have in mind right from the very beginning and even prior to the beginning of their tenure in a particular job.
Absolutely. I love the way you painted that picture. And vision to me is a coach saying, okay, what do I want my legacy to be when it actually comes to coaching? That if you could fast forward 20 years from today, what would I want the people that I care most about and that I love the most to say about my program? You know, are they going to say that this was a program where the kids had an awesome experience, not just on the court, but off the court? Is this a program that developed players? And we'll just take the male side of things, that developed players to become great young men on and off the court, where they got the best out of their potential? Is this a type of program, especially at the high school level, that teaches life lessons that far exceed what they do just when they're playing the game of basketball? Is this the type of program that created a brotherhood and a cohesive unit where the players truly cared and respected each other? Is this the type of program that instilled a competitive fire where players wanted to compete every single day in practice, but did so in a healthy way, that the backup point guard pushed as hard as he could to get, you know, more minutes from the starting point guard, but they both did so in a way that made the team better? And, you know, was this a program that kids are going to want to come back to and visit you 10 years after they graduate from high school? You know, to me, that would kind of be the vision of what I'd want to create. And I believe that if you do all of those things, then you give yourself the best chance to win. I mean, notice I didn't say that my vision is to win 7 state championships, because I believe that if you do all of those things, you'll put yourself in the best position possible to win state championships. So you don't even need to talk about it or worry about it. And that type of vision, I think, is vital. And one thing that I've done that's really helped my own personal life, and I hope this is something that the coaches find valuable, I've kind of created my own personal vision, and it's really simplified my life. You know, I'll actually, at the time of this recording, I'll be turning 44 in a few days, and I keep trying to picture the man that I want to be at 64. You know, 20 years from now, who do I want to be? You know, I want to be someone of high energy and high vitality. I want to be someone that has a very connected relationship with his children, someone that's pursuing his craft and his passion. And I don't know if that will be speaking and writing then or not, but I know that whatever I'll be doing then, I'll be all in and it'll be something I love. You know, I want to be someone that is a true servant of others and fills other people's buckets. I want to be someone that's mentally, physically, and emotionally fit. So as I picture this vision of who I want to be at 64, it makes my current decision making so much easier, because every decision I make in my life now, I just ask myself the binary question, is doing this thing going to take me closer to being that guy at 64, or is it going to take me further away? And the reason I bring that up is that's what I would want coaches to do with their program. They have a vision of the type of program that they want, and then every single behavior that they have or that someone on their team has is either going to take them closer to being that program or it's going to take them further away. And then it's that old adage that you and I have talked about before, you accept it or you correct it. Those are the only two options. If the players are doing something that is taking your program closer to the vision you have, then you praise them, because that which gets praised gets repeated. If they're having behavior that's going in the opposite direction, then you need to correct that. And I think that if you can have that binary filter for your own personal vision and for your program's vision, it simplifies life, excuse me, but will also make sure that you're being as efficient as possible.
I love the connection between the personal vision that a coach might have, because a lot of times we all know that it's very, very easy as a coach to get caught up in some of those ancillary things and the winning and losing and the day-to-day grind of what it is that you're trying to do. It's happened to everybody, I think, who's coached at one time or another. You just get so caught up that you kind of lose your vision of yourself. And I think to keep yourself grounded is really important as you think about the vision for yourself and then for your team. And then I think that leads directly into your next pillar of coaching, which is building a culture. And so once you've set the vision and understand where you want to be, then the culture, I think, is more of the execution of how do you take that vision and bring it into reality. And you've had the good fortune of working with some outstanding coaches over the course of your career. How do they go about communicating that vision and creating that culture within their team? Give us some tips, some ideas, some things that you've seen coaches do well that has enabled them to turn their vision into a reality and create the type of culture that they're looking to build at their program.
Man, I love the way you just set that up, and you nailed it. And I would actually recommend folks hit the rewind button and listen to what Mike just said a couple more times, because it was laced with gold. What you in essence said is, I mean, culture is the alignment between beliefs and behavior. So the beliefs in this case is akin to the vision. Like, this is what we believe is what this program needs to become the program we want to become. But then how are we behaving on a daily basis? And those things need to be in perfect alignment. And ultimately, that's what your culture is. I think the first step to creating a culture, you know, I'm going to take a page out of Coach K's book, is to create standards and to collectively curate these standards from everyone that's on the team, players and coaches, but even managers, strength coaches. I mean, anyone that's involved with the team should have a say in what the standards are, the standards of excellence that we need to collectively uphold, because this is what we believe is best. And then love each other enough to hold each other accountable to those standards so that the behavior is in alignment. And if what you believe and the vision you have is swimming in the same direction as your behavior and your daily actions, then you've created a culture. And it's important for coaches to know every single program and every single organization in the world has a culture. Just some of them are good and some of them are bad, but everyone has a culture. You know, that's what happens when you put, you know, human beings together in an organization. So the key is, how can we make this a winning culture? And when I say winning, I know this is an audio podcast, but I'm saying it with air quotes because I'm not talking about winning games. I've seen teams that were 500 as far as wins, losses, but they had a winning culture because they lived up to their standards. They did things right. They just simply didn't have the talent to be able to win a lot, but they both certainly had a winning culture. I've also seen teams that were just oozing with talent and had awful cultures, and yet they still won a decent amount of games. So, you know, they're winning most of their games, but I actually think they have a losing culture. They just happen to be winning in spite of their culture, not because of it. So culture is a buzzword, and it's thrown around a lot, and I think there's a lot of misunderstanding in what it is. It's living out the values and vision that you have, and that is vital, because culture is the number one determining factor on whether you'll be successful long term, both on and off the court.
All right, so that goes to my next question, which you just hit on it with the long term piece. I think one of the things that I see high school coaches struggle with, especially a coach who comes into a new program who's trying to establish a new culture, and you don't get necessarily the wins and losses right out of the gate. So I'm a new coach, and maybe my first season I'm below 500, and I have this vision, I have this culture that I want to build, and I think at times it can become difficult to sell that culture, to get kids to believe in that culture, to get parents to believe in that culture, to get the community to believe in that culture, if the wins and losses are not where everybody would want them to be. What advice might you have for a coach who's in that situation, who comes into a program that hasn't had much success and is trying to turn it around? What can they do to make sure that everybody stays on that same page where, yeah, we're not getting those wins on the scoreboard, but look at all these other things that are happening. We're eventually going to get there because of my vision, because of the culture. How does a coach stay on the right path, even as maybe they're not winning as many games as they'd like to?
Well, what you just poised right there is absolutely the hardest part of coaching, is getting people to buy in and to believe in something that's not providing the tangible results that everyone wants to see as soon as everyone wants to see them. And what makes coaching so hard, and this is so true in the pros and in college, hopefully less true at high school, at least I would hope, is you're solely judged on wins and losses. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, if you're the GM of an NBA team or you're the AD at a college, you know, you can have the nicest coach in the world that's creating a great, you know, a great culture. But if you're not winning games, you just won't stay very long. And that's because those are businesses. I would hope that high school coaches are not getting fired for lack of wins if they are great role models and they've created a winning culture and they've got, you know, they're doing things the right way. I would hope that a high school administration would value that over simply wins. But, you know, I know that is trickling down to the high school level. And I also want to make the disclaimer that I'm well aware that everything that I say during this podcast or any of my talks, I deliver in a very matter-of-fact tone. But don't get it twisted. Nothing I'm saying is easy. There is nothing easy about creating a winning culture. If that was easy, every program would have a winning culture. There is nothing easy about picturing who you want to be in 20 years and making every single decision in your life align with who you want to be. There's too many other temptations and short-term pleasures that could derail you from that. So none of this stuff is easy. And I think maybe the hardest part of coaching is just that. When the rest of the world is going to judge you based on wins and losses, for you to have the conviction to stick to what you believe is right, even if it's not producing wins in the short term, and to have that long-term view and not sacrifice that, takes tremendous conviction and fortitude and grit. And it's not easy. And this is where the old coaching adage, you get what you emphasize. If all you emphasize is wins and losses, then when you lose, things are going to suck. And if you emphasize other stuff, if you emphasize the progress that the team is making or the effort and attitude that the team has, if you say tonight our goal is to out-rebound them on the offensive glass, and you succeed in out-rebounding them on the offensive glass, and yet you still lose the game, you can still celebrate the fact that you accomplished one of the metrics or goals that you had. So it's all about the expectation. And if I was a high school coach, I would just be transparent about this. I would not hide behind the fact that we're losing some games. I would continually talk to the community, to my AD, to my assistants, and to my players that, yes, I know that we've come up short in these games. I know that doesn't feel good. It sucks, and it should hurt because I want to win just as bad as everyone else. But don't stray from the course. We are doing things the right way, and if we keep doing them the right way, these wins are going to be a natural byproduct. So we just need everyone to be patient and continue to be positive and optimistic. And once again, I'm saying that as if that's an easy thing to do. That is really, really, really challenging.
And that's a process versus results way of looking at things. And I think it's important to remember that when you're the coach, you can't control the results. You may play a team that has twice as much talent as you, and you can do everything right, and you can still lose. And if you're going to be upset, down in the dumps, try to change things, blame other people because something like that happened, you're not going to ultimately end up having success. But if you can, as you said, pick out metrics, pick out landmarks, pick out milestones that your team can reach, even if it's not necessarily reflected on the scoreboard, you can still have success. And I think that's how you create buy-in. And then I'm going to lead that into...
Well, let me say one quick thing before you do. You just said really hit a nerve with me in a great way. A coach needs to be able to dissect why they lost. You lost because the other team played harder than you, well, that's unacceptable and that needs to be fixed. If you lost because the other team played more unselfishly and played more together and played smarter than you, well, that's unacceptable as well. That needs to be fixed. If you lost simply because the other team was better, they had more talent or better athletes, as long as you did everything that you could do execution-wise in your game plan, some nights you just come up short. So I think it's really important to figure out why you're losing games. And as any coach knows, you know, some nights the teams are fairly evenly matched. Both teams play their butt off. Both teams play smart and together. Some nights the ball just doesn't go in. Some nights you just you take good shots and you just miss them. So if you can go back and go, you know what, we took good shots. We just shot a low percentage because that's the nature of basketball. While it still stings a little bit, you should be okay with that. So I'm glad that you brought that up because why you lose games is important. And if we end the season 500 and let's say we go, you know, 12-12, and I go back and I dissect the 12 games that we lost, and I can say that even in those losses, we played really hard, we played really smart, and we played really together, and we took good shots, we just came up short, then that is still a good season of a winning culture if you're doing things the right way. If you simply say, man, my kids just don't show up, they don't play hard, they don't stay focused, you know, that's a reflection of you as the coach. You know, whatever your players do on the court is a reflection of you. If your players take bad shots, that's because you allow them to take bad shots. If your players don't play hard, it's because you haven't found out the way to solve the Rubik's Cube of getting them to buy in and believe in to play hard. So I think coaches should take themselves and hold themselves accountable to everything, but knowing why you lost is a big piece of the puzzle when things aren't going the way that you'd like.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, Alan. I think that that also goes to when I look at a coach and I'm looking at it from the outside, or even if I'm inside on the coaching staff, one of the things when I was in a high school varsity assistant coach that I was always proud of in our program was that I felt like each and every season we got as close to the maximum out of our team as we possibly could. Now, did we squeeze out 100% of their potential? Probably not realistically, but I felt like we came very, very close. And I think as a coach, you can have a 500 team that maximizes its potential. And you can also have a team that goes 23-2 and doesn't come close to maximizing their potential, both as basketball players and as human beings. And I think that's where, again, it goes down to focusing on your processes and not the ultimate results on the scoreboard. As you said, we all know that publicly, coaches are judged by wins and losses. But internally, hopefully there's a lot more things that a coach is basing their success on than just those wins and losses.
Well said.
Head Start Basketball, along with members of the Jay Billis Skills Camp staff, will be hosting the very first Prime Skills Camp, an affiliate of the Jay Billis Skills Camp that is held annually in Charlotte, North Carolina. Prime Skills Camp will take place on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, June 26th through the 28th, and will be designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9. Prime Skills Camp will mirror the Jay Billis Skills Camp in daily programming, teaching, coach-to-camper ratio, and quality of instruction. Prime Skills Camp brings all of the team-oriented individual instruction, focus on the fundamentals, and high-level coaching to young men aspiring to a high school varsity basketball experience. This camp is operated by Billis Camp veterans and includes the Jay Billis Coaches Development Program alongside the camp, ensuring that the quality of teaching and coaching at this camp is second to none. Please visit headstartbasketball.com or jbilliscamp.com for more information or to get registered. All right, so that leads us to being a servant. And I love one of the things that you have in the book that says, remember that when you are a leader, that the people that are, quote, underneath you, they don't work for you, you work for them. So talk about how important that is for a coach to keep that in mind as they're coaching their team.
Oh, it's vital. And this is, you know, one of the reasons that I do love my work is that I can jockey back and forth between having an awesome conversation with you and your listeners on basketball. And then yesterday I was on a stage talking to folks in the corporate world about the exact same stuff. And that is the first thing that I tell every CEO that I work with is your people don't work for you. You work for them. And some of them, they're like, yeah, absolutely. That's the code at which I've lived my entire life. And some of them, it absolutely blows their mind. It's like I just went in and flipped their kitchen table upside down while they were trying to eat dinner. They can hardly wrap their mind around it. And that mindset is what's most important. I mean, there's no questioning that the CEO or the head coach is the final decision maker. They are in charge. They are the ones steering the ship. But when you come to practice and to weight workouts and to games with the mindset of I'm here to serve you, I am here to make you the best player you can be, I'm here to make you the best assistant you can be, and if your goal is to be a head coach, I'm going to help you do that. I'm here to make us collectively the best team we can be, and I'm in service of you all. Just that mindset and that openness and that perspective is so attractive that you get more buy-in and believe in. You get players that want to play harder for you. You get coaches that want to work harder for you. You get people that want to be a part of the program. Because anytime a coach thinks it's all about them, it does the opposite effect. So coaching and teaching, I believe, is the epitome of servanthood. I mean, your entire life and vocation is dedicated towards filling other people's buckets, but you have to go that extra mile and have that attitude. Not only am I here to fill your buckets, I'm here to serve you in every capacity and make this the best experience you've ever had. And that slight change of reference of framing it is vital.
I think what you said there too, it's important to remember that as a coach, we're there not only to serve our players to help them improve as basketball players, but we're also there to serve them and help improve them as people. Especially, I know we've sort of framed this from a high school coaching perspective. If you're a high school coach, you should be serving your players not only by teaching them to become a better basketball player and develop their skills on the court, but also teach them to become better people, better young men, better young ladies who are going to go out and eventually 10 years down the road, that's when you're really going to see how well you were able to serve your players, when you see their success in their life, when they get married, when they get a job, when they have children, and the kind of parents that they become. And I read a great quote. Now I can't remember who to attribute it to, but the quote basically said that a coach was asked, what type of success, how was your season? Were you successful this year? And the coach said, I won't really know until 20 years from now when I see where my players are at that point. I thought that was a really powerful way to frame what it means to be a servant leader, is that it's not just about right here in this moment making them a better basketball player. It really is something that it's a long-term game. And when you're serving others, I think that's really what you're looking for. You're trying to help them have success in the moment, but you're also trying to help them have success for the long term in their life.
Well said. And I love that approach, because part of making someone the best player they can be is for them to know that you care so much about them that you would care about them even if they didn't play basketball, that you care about them as a human being first and a basketball player second. I mean, I can only imagine if a player thought that you only cared about them because they were good at the game, and if they were to get injured, or if for any reason they weren't able to play, or when they graduate, that you would stop caring about them. That is such a transactional relationship that I just don't see them being all in and giving you their complete heart and soul to practice and play as hard as possible. You know, every player should feel that, you know, if I suffered a catastrophic injury tomorrow that would not allow me to play this game, my relationship with my coach wouldn't change at all. I mean, he'd have to make some strategic changes because they're missing a player, but my relationship wouldn't change, that he or she would still care about me as a human being first. And I think that's vital. And to me, now that I'm getting older especially, that's what I would value the most as a coach, is the relationships. You know, 20 years from now, you're probably not going to remember every single final score. You know, you're going to remember some of the big wins and some of the tougher losses, but you're not going to remember that near as much as I hope you would remember the relationship that you built with certain players and if you're still keeping in touch with them to this day. And to me, that's what's most valuable, especially if we're going to continue to focus on the youth and high school age.
And I think the other thing that goes along with that is when you're a coach and you're talking about building relationships and valuing kids, not just as basketball players, but as people first. I think that if you are a coach, one of the things that's very, very important is to develop strong relationships with the kids who are on your bench, who don't play a lot. Because if those players, and frankly, the players who are playing a lot, if you're spending all your time, energy, effort building relationships only with your very best players who are out on the floor all the time, and you're ignoring those kids at the end of the bench, eventually that's going to come back to bite you, because those kids are going to get disgruntled. They're going to start thinking, coach doesn't care about me. I'm not really a part of this team. And I think that's very, very important when we talk about being a servant leader, is you're not just there to serve the people who can serve you, but you're there to serve everybody. And to me, being a great coach and having a great culture and instilling your vision, all the things we've talked about to this point, I think all it's critical for you to be able to build those relationships with every single person who's a part of your program. That could be the manager, that could be your 15th man, that could be the water boy, that could be a faculty member who sits at the scorer's table and keeps your book for you. All those things I think are critical. And that goes to the next point that you bring up in coaching, which is a person's character. So talk a little bit about why, as a coach, you need to make sure that you are demonstrating positive character, great character, and how that helps you to be a success on and off the basketball court.
You know, it's a shame that I even felt the need to put character in, because it should just be a non-negotiable. It should just be something that, you know, I didn't put a chapter in there on breathing, because I assume everyone knows you need to breathe. But I did want to highlight it because it's that important. And we live in a landscape today where many people, unfortunately, are willing to make sacrifices and look for shortcuts and hacks, and sometimes overlook missteps of poor judgment or bad character, because it allows them to win at a higher level. So I still felt the need to put it in there. And, you know, character, I mean, if we're going to be really cliche, it's what you do when no one's watching. You know, we talk a lot about the unseen hours that I stole specifically from my buddy Drew Hanlon. He came up with the concept. But, you know, character is vital. And character, I don't think it's as much as a coach of what you say to your team. It's what you do, and that they need to see that you are a high character person of respect. Like, you respect others. You do things the right way. You do things the right way, even if you don't feel like doing them, that you don't look for shortcuts. And so I think character is more from a coaching standpoint. You just need to embody that all of the time in front of your players. And I would hope that you would do that anyway. It has nothing to do with doing it just because the players are going to see it. But, you know, I know as a father and as a coach that people are always going to lean towards what you do, not what you say. So you can't tell your team that it's important to be respectful and then they see you disrespect the manager. You can't tell your team it's important to be on time and you roll up the practice 1 minute before practice is going to start. You can't tell your team they need to be prepared for practice and you come in haphazard and don't have a practice plan. So character is making sure that you have that alignment, like we talked about earlier, between your values and your beliefs and your behavior. So character shouldn't have to be something we talk about, but I don't ever want it to fall by the wayside.
You can't fake it. You are who you are, and your actions demonstrate the type of character that you have, and we'll leave it at that.
Coaches, check out these new offerings from Tyler Whitcomb Basketball Coaching Courses. The Brad Underwood Illinois Playbook by Devin Gibson. Brad Underwood is in his third season at Illinois as the Richmond Family Endowed men's head basketball coach, following his hiring as the 18th coach in the program's history in March of 2017. Underwood has won more than 67% of his games through his first 6 years as a Division I head coach, recording 4 20-win seasons while making 4 NCAA tournament appearances. Also now available is the Iran National Team Playbook by Farshad Alemi. Visit coachtube.com/users/Tyler Whitcomb to check out these great resources.
Jump to the last pillar as we're pushing up on our time here. Empowerment. Talk about what empowerment means from a coaching standpoint and why
it's so important that you empower the people that you're there to serve.
I really believe that's the number one gift of a coach, is being able to have a positive influence on others and to fill their buckets and to make them feel like they're capable of being the best that they can be. And that's really what empowering is. It's giving them some autonomy and putting people in places where they have an opportunity to be successful, and they will feel empowered when they start to taste some of that success. So whether you're empowering one of your assistant coaches to take on more responsibility so that you're grooming them so that they can be a head coach one day, or you're empowering your backup point guard to feel confident enough that if the starting point guard fouls out, that you'll come in and still do a phenomenal job because we believe in you. When you can empower others and, you know, I'll go ahead and be incredibly cliche, raise their game, now you've got something really, really, really special. And I think the best leaders I've ever been around, just being in a room with them, I felt empowered that I could do more than I thought previously, that I felt like, wow, I'm capable of doing this. And that's really special. And that's something the best leaders do. I mean, they make everyone around them feel like they can be the best versions of themselves.
They absolutely do. And I think that they take you to places where you didn't think that you could get yourself. Coaches, a lot of times, who are the best coaches, get you to believe that you can achieve more than you might have thought on your own. And then not only they help you to see that, but then they help you to draw that out. And that could be from the perspective of drawing that out of a player. It could be drawing it out of an assistant coach. Empowerment is so critical. So we've hit on the five characteristics that you laid out in Raise Your Game that can help coaches to have success. As we wrap up here, Alan, I want to give you a chance to once again share where people can get your book. You now have an accompanying workbook that goes along with the book for coaches who are out there that want to go through the book with their team as part of a book group, a book study. And it's great stuff. So let people know where they can find out more information about that. Share any other ways that people can reach out to you, get in contact with you, and then I'll jump back on and wrap things up.
This is my favorite part of every episode, where I just get to talk about myself and plug all of my stuff. Thank you so much. So if
you got
everyone's
it.
Available for the next 20 minutes, I'd like to tell you about... No. Thank you so much, Mike. You are the best. As far as the book, you can go to raiseyourgamebook.com. I am able to offer a 42% discount for anyone that wants to buy in bulk. So if you want to get 10 or 15 or 25 copies for your team or program, I can give you a great discount, and I can sign each copy. As Mike mentioned, I just released what I'm calling the Book Club, which is a facilitator guidebook and a team member workbook, which actually allows you to sit down formally with your team and take the lessons and strategies from Raise Your Game and put them into action. And it's a great way to create some dialogue and some cohesion. I also just released the Raise Your Game show, which is currently just a podcast, but will eventually be hopefully an internet show with video. And you can just search for the Raise Your Game show and Alan Stein Jr. In iTunes or wherever you listen to this podcast. You'll be able to find it there as well. I'm at Alan Stein Jr. on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and I'm always posting this type of stuff. And then lastly, if you have any interest in the speaking portion, whether to bring me in to speak to your team or your whole athletic department or whole school, and that can be done either virtually through a video call or in person, just go to AlanSteinJr.com. And anyone listening to this in the continental United States, you can subscribe to my email list and get some free bonuses by just texting the word bonus to 66866. As soon as you're done listening after Mike wraps up, just text bonus to 66866. I'll send you some notes on all of the talks that I give, a few other free goodies, and then you'll subscribe to the list where I send out 3 monthly emails. So that was a lot of self-promotion. So back to you, Mike.
Love it. We will put all of that in the show notes so that people who are not in the car, who are in the car and furiously trying to scribble that down, you can just be patient and go to hoopheads.com and find Alan's find episode 250. You'll be able to scribble all that down and reach out to Alan and get that information from him. A lot of great stuff. Everything that he does it first class, and I think you could see that from the podcast. Alan, I can't thank you enough for being number 250 and number 1, and it looks like number 500 and number 1,000. So hopefully we'll still be, hopefully the show will still be kicking when we get to number 1,000. But I can't thank you enough for taking some time out of your schedule this morning to jump on with us again. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Registration is now open at headstartbasketball.com for this summer's Head Start Basketball Camps. We'll be hosting camps for boys and girls in grades 1 through 6 throughout the greater Cleveland area. Get registered today and make sure you hit the courts with us this summer.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.